Hello there. Welcome to another episode of Tech Empowered, the podcast where we share real stories of people whose lives have been transformed by technology across Africa and beyond. This podcast is brought to you by Tech for Dev. Tech for Dev is a non-profit organization creating opportunities for economic prosperity through digital skills empowerment and advocacy. I am your host, Yemisi, and I am so glad to be here with you today on another exciting episode. On each episode of this podcast, we bring you stories of people who took a bold step into tech, who embraced learning and found new paths. Our guest today is Agnes Lynn Ahawe, a woman whose journey shows how curiosity and consistent learning can open unexpected doors. A few years ago, Agnes couldn't have imagined where her journey would lead. Her journey into tech started with the Women Texas Fellowship, where she studied data science and artificial intelligence, a decision that opened new doors and eventually led to her master's in artificial intelligence at Carnegie Mellon University, Africa. Today, she's part of a team using AI to reimagine healthcare, building solutions that support early disease detection and make technology more inclusive. Agnes is here today to share her story with us, and I can't wait for you guys to meet her. So settle in and let's get right into the conversation for today. Thank you so much for joining us today, Agnes. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, MSC. Thank you for having me today.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's start with the basics. Let's get to meet Agnes. Who is Agnes? What do you do? Tell us a bit about your background and generally what makes you tick.
Well, to preface with this, I'll just say that I'm just a girl who loves science. I love fiction and I love being happy. So if I'm not researching, maybe building a model or trying to put together class assignments for my students, I'll probably be, you know, either reading a book or sipping tea. I love tea so much.
And I love tea too.
So I'm just a simple girl. I love science. I love engineering so much. I did not think I would be an engineer. If you asked me 12 years ago what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would probably say I want to be a neurosurgeon. Well, that did not work out, but I would say I'm happy it didn't, because I don't think I would have met the people I've met in this tech journey.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much for that introduction. Okay, so before joining the Women Texas Fellowship, what was your background and what first drew you toward technology and data science and AI?
So you know how I mentioned that, you know, I would have wanted to be a medical personnel. So it turns out I was unable to be a doctor or a surgeon, but I joined a course called biomedical engineering. So I'm a biomedical engineer. I have 4 years school in that, and I have experience in that. I've worked with different companies on like working with medical equipment, and honestly I did not know much about data. Like the only thing I knew about data was probably from my biostatistics class, and that was probably my first introduction to Python. I had done a C programming course for like a short while, but I wasn't really into it. So that was my first experience with Python, with biostatistics. And I had a friend of mine, if I call her my best friend, she would probably roll her eyes, but I'll say she's my best friend. And she inspired me. Like, she started doing this course in R, like biostatistics in R. And that was quite cool. I looked at it and said, would not be me. I don't think I could do that. Because that time I had a part-time gig that I was doing, data collection for a PhD student. And I wasn't really, you know, R looked a bit boring and everything. So fast forward to, we're about to graduate. And then she says, I'm going to take up maybe this internship with data analysis. I'm like, well, that's interesting. Maybe I should look into it as well. And then COVID happened and, you know, was stuck home for like almost a year. And then another cousin of mine, you know, someone from different walks of life, someone who has never met my friend, sends me a flyer of the Women in Texas Fellowship. I'm like, this is cool. Let me try it. So when I read into, you know, data science and AI, I'm like, this sounds interesting. You know, I would love to know more about this. I like knowing things. I want to collect knowledge, you know, all the time. So I'm interested in this data science, AI. I'm like, I have to know everything. what do they know that I don't? So, I mean, that's how I ended up in the class. And I mean, I would say it has been uphill since then.
Fantastic. Thank you. I mean, that's an interesting journey. Okay, so now you signed up for the fellowship and you were in the data science and AI track. What was that experience like for you?
So that class, I would say it was the greatest 6 months of training that I'd ever had. Well, it was adventurous. Before, in my walks of life, I'd never really worked with people from like different nationalities or even different walks of life. So my undergrad, I was mostly with people from my own country. I'm from Uganda. And we did not have everyone is someone that has gone through almost the same experience that you have. So when I'm studying online with all these wonderful ladies from across Africa, I feel like I was being exposed, like my eyes are being opened to other people's experiences, because we had like stories of other people, you know, we had mothers. So, you know, it's during the class and then like she is making it a point to get to class. And I'm asking myself that I'm not a mom, but this, I have no excuse to miss a class. But there's this mother out there who is making it a point to join a class for 2-3 hours and make sure that, you know, she gets the assignments done and everything. Like, who am I not to be able to do that? I have no other responsibilities. Why shouldn't I do that? And I would say, minus the whole, you know, my eyes being open, the classes were really good. They were first fast-paced. I don't like things that are slow. I mean, we have places to be. Let's get things done and, you know, get to the next best thing. We had this assignment about the Titanic, you know, the survivors and everything. I would say it was my favorite assignment. And I kind of linked it to something that was happening in my own personal life. And I told someone that had a hand in creating that experience for me. And I think it's really something trivial. It's really nothing that interesting, but it just made me so happy when we did it. And when I said that these 6 months were adventurous, one particular moment stands out. I've told many people this story and they always laugh at me. But so, when I was working as an engineer, so I was working with a company and I was doing a lot of field work. So I moved like hospital to hospital, you know, checking the equipment, all that stuff. But then I was doing it alongside the fellowship as well. So when it would get to time to class, because I was in Uganda, it would be midday, from like around midday to around 2 p.m., 2 or 3 p.m. So I would be like, okay, you know, it's lunchtime. I'll just find a small cafe or coffee shop, sit down, maybe get lunch as I attend the class. So this one time, it was a Thursday afternoon, I remember this. I had my food, you know, we're going through, so I think it was principal component analysis. I remember that topic so well. And I'm trying to ask a question in regards to that. And so I'm not really caring about, you know, where my food is. I'm looking at my laptop and focused. And I think I would say a mentally unstable person. I want to say a madman. He just came in and grabbed my food.
Oh,
and then left. And I'm like right there. I'm like, what is happening? So I forget my question. I'm like, what is happening? Well, I have never forgotten that. I mean, it was a pivotal moment in my journey.
It would not have been funny. Capture to him? How did he get into was it like an outdoor space or
no, it wasn't an outdoor. It was not like an open concept kind of thing. So it's wide open, And he just came in. What was funny is that the waiters, when, you know, confronted and like, you know, how could you let someone do that to a client? And they're like, oh no, you know, he always does that. So he's like a repeat offender and they're doing nothing about it.
And you all did nothing about it.
They did nothing. And I'm still in shock. I can't do anything. But I mean, it was an experience.
And you were trying to ask a question at that moment.
Oh my God.
So sorry.
Yeah, I forgot my question as well. I guess probably that's why I'm really terrible at this particular concept, PCA. Because, I mean, I was traumatized. It was crazy.
I don't know about it. So sorry. I mean, it's funny now, but I'm sure it wasn't funny in the moment.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't funny.
Oh my God.
So sorry about that. Oh well, I mean, it's on the establishment. They should have found a way to fix that problem. It's a repeat of him that you shouldn't even allow that. The moment you see him coming, just, you know, find a way to ensure that you block his access somehow. It's just crazy.
It was crazy. I mean, I think about it today and I'm like, bam, we have come from so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, aside this very traumatic experience, were there any other moments in the fellowship that, you know, really stood out to you and maybe also has impacted the way you approach work today?
Yeah, I think in that regard, I would say with this, I think it was the outreach where we were asked to, like, you know, go out and to institutions and try to inspire young students, young women especially, about technology. If you are aware of the whole, you know, about girls being scared to join male-dominated spaces. Yeah. So I think it was the moment that really stood out for me, and it was going out to empower these students. So the first place we went to was a primary school. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was, you know, a mixed school, both boys and girls. And we're telling these students about, you know, how far we've come. You know, we're doing this program. We're all out of university. We're doing ABC. We're working. And you could see that the girls are very, you know, eager and attentive to listen to us, because they're like, okay, first of all, I would want to preface that this school is not really like, it's not like the best school. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a school where everyone is just going and you do not know if at the end of it, you're going to have enough school fees to take you to higher education. So mm-hmm. I felt like these girls, when I spoke to the students, they came and spoke to us after the session and they were asking us, you know, like, how did you do it? How was it mm-hmm. difficult? Like, who was your support? Who was supporting you? And it was very touching to me because I have had a supporting family. Like, my parents have been supportive in all this. I want to say, I don't want to say nonsense, but when I want to try something, I tell my father and he's like, okay, let me know how it goes. So if I fail, mm-hmm. I'll let him know that, by the way, I failed. And he says, okay, maybe what did you do wrong? He'll try to walk me through it. If I succeeded, he'll be so happy that, well done, my child, you have succeeded. So having a support system behind me kind of made me want to be a support system to these students as well. Right now, since I'm in Rwanda, I've not really had the chance to speak to a lot of them, but I have assisted a few people to apply to come to CMU as well. And I'm actually proud to say that one of them joined CMU this August. Not one of the students we dropped to, but someone that I assisted in their application. So I feel like being able to help others, like seeing where I've been fortunate and helping others try to achieve what I have achieved or even more, that's what's giving me purpose. And that's mostly how I approach my work these days.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I'm very, very big on giving back. Even Tech for Dev as an organization, we're very big on giving back, on ensuring that, you know, you make space for the next person coming after you. As much as you have been poured into, ensure that you're also pouring into others, which is why we have that, the Tech Girls Advocacy, which is what you were referring to. And it's just my venue to ensure that, you know, we are going into communities, into schools, public schools, just so that the young girls there know that they can dream.
Mm-hmm.
They can dream bigger, right, than whatever it is that they're seeing around them, right? And that's really cool. Well done. I hope that you
I get to do more of that because, yeah, we need more people, you know, to extend that helping hand to other people. Okay, so now you did your master's in AI. What was that transition like? And, you know, how did your time in the fellowship prepare you for that?
Well, I would say, first of all, I want to say thank you to Tech for Dev and the Women Tech Sales Fellowship, because if it was not for the Women Tech Sales Fellowship, I do not think I would have gotten this master's in AI. I just graduated in May of this year. And 2 years ago, actually, I'll say 3 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, like, 3 years ago today is when I was trying to apply to come to CMU. And I believe that's when the Women Tech Sales Fellowship had also just started. So it started in August. And by October, November, I'd started my application to CMU. So I should actually say that I had been rejected before joining CMU. And I believe it was because I was not really, I didn't have, I would say, like, a particular skill set that they needed for the course. So they don't need you to know everything about AI, but they need a little bit to know, okay, so you have this much, we know how we're going to give you, you know, you cannot multiply on nothing, right?
So I had zero. There, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't multiply and give me, you know, it would still be zero. So I had the Women Tech Sales Fellowship gave me, I would say 10, and CMU just, you know, took on the rest, like, just gave me everything. So Women Tech Sales Fellowship paved my way to my master's. And when I joined this fellowship, I actually came to learn more. I realized that I said that I will study better by myself, you know, self-learning and everything, but I want to say that that is a lie. I like studying with other people. Mm-hmm. I want to be in a community. If my friend is doing her homework and they also have the same homework, I will most likely do it. So the transition from being a biomedical engineer into now being an AI engineer, one would think I have abandoned my traditional engineering degree, but I want to say that I've more like added onto it.
Wow.
Just not on top, but onto the side. You know, I'm trying to give it girth over height at the moment. So the fellowship really helped. Like, it prepared me for the intensity. You know, I mentioned earlier the fast-paced lessons. And yeah, CMU is very quick, like, very fast. They're not waiting for you. Initiative, you find the teaching assistant to say, I do not understand this concept, please walk me through. Or I have this assignment, maybe I have 3 assignments and they're all due in the same week. You either prioritize and you decide to submit late, or you manage your time and say, okay, I'm going to work on this, I'm going to work on this. If this fails, I'm going to just skip and work on this. So you have all these things that you're juggling. And the fellowship was like, you know, so like one class, but would have group work. You have the give back project. You have a presentation mentors. And on top of all that, you have a full-time job. Your boss is asking you for results. This prepared me. I was ready.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Agnes. Okay, so as a researcher, can you share a bit about the projects that you're most excited about and the impacts they've been able to make?
Okay, I love talking about the things I do. Most of my projects that I'm working on currently, I'm basing them on my background in biomedical engineering. Like I've been working around hospitals, so I know a bit of like the health side, right? And so I'm working in a lab, the Opanzi Network or SciLab Africa. And the projects I'm working on are all in health tech. So the first one that probably that brought me actually into the lab and brought me back to my BME background, it was addressing the biases in neurological and respiratory monitoring technologies. So mostly EEGs and pulse oximetry. So if you recall back in 2020, when because of COVID, the oxygen levels of some people would be like really low. And there was the whole surge of these portable pulse oximeter devices, you know, so that you can do it at home. You can check that your oxygen level is, you know, above maybe 92, 93 to make sure that, you know, you're not going to pass away in your sleep. But then with a bit of research that some people had already done, we realize that because of our melanated skin, you know, as African, most of this technology comes from people that have very light skin, so the white people. Mm-hmm. So they bring it here, but it doesn't really work that well. Because of our melanated skin, there could be some disparities in the oxygen level. Because that pulse oximeter device uses light refraction. So if the light going through your finger is being distorted by, you know, first of all, the thickness of your skin, the flesh inside, the blood, then now your melanin as well. So it's significantly reducing what light is being going, what light is passing through and being reflected on the other end. So your oxygen level could be marked down lower when in actual reality, it's really not. But it's just because there's disparity because of our skin. And the reason why that technology is mostly favored is because it's non-invasive and it kind of gives you real-time data. But then with these disparities, this bias that is around it, it may not really be that helpful. So of course, the engineers in our countries, they try to like maybe adjust them, you know, mark them down. If someone is like really, really dark, they try to reduce the calibration so that yes, even if it goes through and it's being blocked by like, you know, very dark skin, it still tries to give a right measurement, but only because someone on the outside is tampering, like has recalibrated it and not because it's working on its own. Yeah, so that's one of the things. The other one that I'm actually working on diligently is the neurological technology, so EEG. And this research actually started in Pittsburgh, at CMU in Pittsburgh, with a lady that proposed an ingenious solution to stop people having to shave their heads when going to take an EEG test. So, you know, they attach like rods on your scalp.
Yeah.
Like if right now, like I have, I wouldn't say I have very long hair, but it makes a decent afro. If I had to go to a hospital to do an EEG and they said, oh, you know what, you have to chop your hair off, I'll say, you know what, let me die. I will not part of my hair. I want to die with my hair. Like, I'm not part of my hair. So this lady had the same argument, if I should say. So she designed something called a servo clip, where it's kind of like, it's like a hair clip, yes? But then it has a little hole in the middle where you place the electrode and then fit it in your hair on like maybe braids or cornrows. So instead of having to chop off your hair, like to trim your hair to be bald, you just braid your hair really well. And then they attach these hair clips or servo clips inside that are holding down the electrode directly onto your scalp without having to take off your hair. And it actually gave better contact. It's giving better impedance readings. And I mean, at the end, you walk out of a hospital with a fresh new hairstyle. Who's going to say no? But it's quite cool. And I love it. And of course, I'm working on also some other projects. I find it difficult. With CMU, you kind of learn very quickly that you cannot be satisfied with just working on one thing, because at all times your brain has to be moving. Even right now, after this, probably recording this, I'll give myself like 20 minutes rest and then start on more work.
But
the other project I just joined recently is a health app called Humeka FL. It's for early detection of birth asphyxia. So instead of having to wait for your baby to turn blue, their cries can actually let you know that your baby has asphyxia or not, using our application that uses a federating learning model, which keeps on improving like with each iteration. And we do not collect data from hospitals to keep it on our servers. No, everyone stays with their own data, but we have a central model that keeps on updating and training with the different aggregations that come from different people that use it. So that's one other thing. And the most recent one is also on the early detection, and it's mostly on cancer. For it, it's really, really in very early stages. We are still in talks with the doctors. We want to create a multimodal solution where we have like this big model that contains all different modalities of cancer storages, the way they store cancer images or cancer data, and try to help in the early detection. And also, if people in the future would want to make more cancer models, instead of having to gain to go through what we are going through now, trying to get data from a hospital, this model is like already built to generate synthetic data for them that is very close to the real world data that is happening. So yeah, those are the three I would say that are main, that I'm mainly working on. Yeah, sorry for talking too much.
I mean, it's an amazing project. I've learned so much in just the few things that you have shared. And what just keeps coming to mind is the fact that we need more people exploring tech. And by more people, I mean more diverse people, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing you mentioned about the oxygen levels and how, you know, the model wasn't really calibrated for melanated skin, right? Mm-hmm. If we are innovating in our own ways, right, and trying to build these products and build things for us, right?
Yeah.
It will make things a lot better and a lot easier, right? Rather than having to like remodify what is already existing, or even if we're going to remodify, but having more people, having more hands, right? And the EEG, having to shave your head, and the fact that it was a woman that said, oh, why do I have to shave my head? Why can't we do it this way? I've come up with it. So if we have more women, you know, in the field, we're able to, you know, innovate and come up with solutions for the problems that have been in existence for so long. I mean, it's amazing, amazing work that you're doing. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay, so, interesting. Okay, so looking back, what has changed the most for you since stepping into tech?
This is actually very interesting. Having a desk job, I have never before sat on a desk for 8 hours. Like, this is my first time, like, just getting a job in tech is my first time that I'm at a desk for 8 hours. What do you mean I'm not going to meet a client out there? What do you mean I'm not on my feet for like 4 or 5 hours trying to put back together this person's machine? So I want to say it's both good and bad. I like sitting, but not too much, not for 8 hours. And I love tech, but I had no idea that I would be on my laptop for 8 hours every day. That's changed the most. If you recall what I said, when I was still, before I joined a CMU, I was working in Uganda. And I never went to the office. I would only go to the office on days I had a meeting with my manager.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be what, like 20 minutes. And then I'm back in the field because that's where where my work is. That's where my people are. I've tested corporate. No, I don't like sitting as much as I thought I did. but I'm not complaining. I mean, it's great. I mean, I do stand up and walk around, you know, short walk, take a coffee, but it's like the biggest change for me since coming into tech.
Interesting. I mean, in life, there's always a trade-off, right? How maybe something that you do really is exciting now, but there's also a part of it that you're like, I don't really like this so much, but I like this aspect of it. So maybe this is bearable, right? So there's always a trade-off. Yeah, there's always a trade-off. So just find like what excites you about whatever place you find yourself, and then just try to, you know, do more of that. It's how we survive, basically.
That is true.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So
So what advice would you give to someone listening who feels uncertain about their ability to maybe start a career in tech, or maybe they want to pursue their passion, but they're uncertain, they're not sure how to go about it? What advice would you give to such a person?
Let's see. So, you know, in this state, mostly I would probably say, you know, follow your dreams, but I don't think I can say that. Mostly because dreams are flimsy, they disappear when you wake up, and reality is going to hit you in the face. And you will know that, you know, maybe, you could dream of, you know, traveling the world, but what's your bank account saying? Well, our passports are very weak, you know. A visa and everything. So what I would say,
don't talk to me directly, don't go to the corners.
No, believe me and you, we're in the same boat.
Oh my god.
But what I would say is look at the opportunity in front of you and ask yourself, how long is it going to take you to achieve this opportunity? Is it going to be beneficial to you if you pursue it? Because whether or not you take that chance or opportunity in front of you, the time is still going to pass. So if I give like a small anecdote, before when I applied to come to CMU, I actually was really lucky and I got a full ride scholarship with MasterCard. And every day I thank God for that. But what some people do not know is that probably on the same day I got that MasterCard scholarship, I actually got another job offer at another company. It's called Philips. Very good benefits, good salary. Like, I was not going to complain at all, right? So I'm sitting there with two things that I want. You know, I'm going to make more money with this new job. Same, I'm going to still be a biomedical engineer. But then in 2 years after this job, I still will not have a master's degree. If I go with a scholarship, come to CMU, after 2 years, yes, I'll not probably have a job in biomedical engineering, but I'm going to have a master's degree. And I realized that I wanted a master's degree. So not like, you know, it was like, it's the thing that I really, really want in life and everything. But at that point in time, a master's degree was more attractive.
More sense.
Yeah, because even if I had gone 2 years and worked, time is still going to pass. You know, the 2 years I've spent in school, time has passed. I now have a master's degree. If I had not gone for it, time was still going to pass, and I'll probably be in a whole other state. Maybe I would not even be doing this podcast today. But whichever chance you take, time is not going to stop for you. And do you want to be where you are right now, 3 years into the future? Or do you want to have achieved something that is worth sharing, or something that you're very proud of sharing? And I want to say that I don't think I made the wrong choice, because I'm very happy to speak on this. I think last year there was a fireside chat with Paul Andrew. And I kept on feeling like, yes, this is exactly what I want. I want to keep speaking about my journey to these people. I want to inspire more people to do something, like to be inspired by my own story, that, you know, I gave up something that I had right in front of me to pursue something that probably not many people would have gone for, because money is attractive. Honestly, you ask me, I like money.
Oh, yes.
Money is my best friend. But there's always that something, a tiny bit more, that one thing that is, you know, more, I won't say attractive, something that pulls you a little more than that one thing that is. Yeah, so I want to say that if you have something in front of you and you feel you want to achieve it, take that jump. Because what's life without risk? Don't jump off a bridge, but, like, you know, the metaphorical bridge of entering tech. Jump that one, not the actual bridge.
Not the actual one, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'll tell someone, yeah.
Thank you so much for keeping it real, Agnes. Thank you. So my last question to you is, tell me a fun fact about Agnes.
Fun facts. How fun does it have to be? I already told you my hobbies are reading. I like reading. I like eating.
You like eating?
Yes, I love eating.
Interesting. What's your favorite food?
No, that's a difficult question because...
Wow. Oh, yeah. I get that. It's a difficult question to ask a foodie what their favorite food is because they have a difficult time choosing. That's it, right?
How can I choose? How can I choose?
Where there are a lot of beautiful and...
Thank you. Yes.
Do you cook?
Not often. I do, but I was going to ask
what's your favorite meal to cook, because that's like, you know, that might be an easy
answer. I like people cooking for me.
So you just cook the food, bring it, let me eat, and yeah, you're one of those people.
And you see, I want to say, as an East African, I would want to be the person that puts a stop to this whole jollof war that you guys have. I want to eat all the jollof in West Africa. So from Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, Benin, Senegal, I will try to eat all your jollofs and tell you who's the best.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I think that would really help because that war has been on for... forever.
Way too long.
I mean, we need to put it to rest at this point. Thank you so much, Agnes. It was really lovely having this conversation with you. I learned so much from your work and just your journey is so inspiring. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on this podcast with us.
Thank you so much, Emisi, for having me. I had fun.
Yeah, same here. Thank you so much. Now we've come to the end of this episode. It was lovely having this conversation with Agnes. One thing that stands out in her journey is that relentless drive to learn and grow. And that's a quality that has carried her from discovering the Women Texas Fellowship to now using the knowledge to transform healthcare across Africa and even globally. To everyone listening, Agnes's story reminds us that every step you take to learn, even when you feel small, can open doors to incredible opportunities. Thank you so much for joining us today on Tech Empowered. Don't keep this to yourself. Share it with someone who needs a little bit of encouragement. And subscribe if you haven't yet. Subscribe to Tech Empowered so you never miss an episode from us. Check out our other powerful stories from our previous episodes. And I am your host, Yemisi. And until next time, keep learning, keep growing. Bye for now.